also known as Stars.
You have questions. Find your answers at starspsychics.com.
Hello, I'm Natalie, owner of starspsychics.com.
You have questions. Find your answers at starspsychics.com.
Okay, sorry about that. Another great show. I'm going to talk a little bit about what's going on. MysticLivingToday.com, of course, is up. The new issue is up. I'm going to be sending out reminders pretty soon on the 20th or so. Oh, it's time to do this. I'll put in the subject line, it's that time again, people. And they'll think, oh, God, where does the month go? The only bad part about doing a magazine like that monthly is that the months go by so fast because you're sending out reminders. And then on the 28th or the 29th of the month, I'm doing the easing, and that's a big job. So I found, like, this last issue, I took 3 days to do it. That's how big it was. But, you know, that's one of my loves. So that's okay for me. I don't mind doing it at all. And, of course, so that'll be coming. And go there. I have an anniversary special for my friend Billy Dotson. I did a year ago in the last October about his book. That he took pictures from Africa, and if you go there this time, you'll see all new pictures in the new issue, and he actually sends me the photographs. I mean, I'm always so thrilled when somebody does that for me. Then, you know, of course, we have StarsWithAZPsychics.com. We have specials going on there, of course, with new accounts, new people coming on board. You've got all kinds of options. We have the one question for $5, and it's doing really well, I'm happy to say. And so without further ado, I'm going to bring our guest in. His name is Daryl Dunham. Daryl, how are you doing tonight? Good?
I'm doing excellent. Thanks for having me.
I like to hear that. Excellent. Excellent. I love it. So now I always ask everybody, now you've written a book called The Yoke. And now that was done, what, in 2016? Is that correct?
It was finally published, first go-round in 2016, yes.
Okay, all right. Was it difficult to write?
It was time-consuming, but not difficult. I have a, you know, full-time job, and I just started out as a hobby, and then I got kind of encouraged, and so I just decided to, you know, push it through for publication.
Right. Okay. So now let's go back from the very, very beginning of your life. I know you're married to your lovely wife, Betsy, for 48 years. You have 5 children. But tell me, how did you get started? I know you teach law, or you taught law. Are you still teaching law right now?
No, I've been retired for about 16 years. I have a full-time practice.
Okay, but you are still practicing. You're still a practicing attorney, right?
Correct.
Okay. You like doing that? That's a challenge. That's got to be a challenge. A lot of preparation, right?
I tell people I feel that God created me to be a lawyer, and that's one of the secrets to life is to be doing something that you were created to do. So, yes, I'm very happy in my work.
And to love what you do, that's the important thing. Oftentimes you'll find out people, oh, I hate my job. But if you can just find something that's going to give you some kind of make you a living of some kind. Maybe you're not going to get super rich, but you're going to love it. You're still going to love what you're doing, right? I love what I do. You know, I have several sites. I have 3 sites. I didn't start out with them in the very beginning, but, you know, we all have to start somewhere. Okay, so you went into law. Okay, you went to Harvard, correct?
I got an advanced degree. I didn't get my first law degree at Harvard.
Okay, all right, so you did that, and you started doing your law stuff and all of that. And then down the road, okay, this book, did it just pop in your head, or you started jotting notes? Some people have these visualizations. They'll have this idea about, oh, yeah, I mean, I have a fairy tale in my head. Everybody knows about this fairy tale, but that's just me. But, like, for something with the book that you did, and I have to tell everybody, this book is called The Yoke, Y-O-K-E, and it's a story of faith, love, forgiveness, and redemption. And I'm going to have him get into that because, you see, he's going, we have Daryl going from his Christian, his belief, and then he's an attorney, so that's all about facts. So, yeah, that was that difficult? That, you know, you had your beliefs, but then you had your facts in front of you. This is the law. We have to go by the law. It's not really how I feel about something. Was that tough sometimes for you?
You mean in terms of the conversion experience?
Yeah.
That was difficult. The main character in my book, his name is Barnabas. It's kind of an odd name for character, and there's a reason why I picked that name. But a lot of his arguments, he is not a believer. His mother was a very devout lady, but she had a very major accident, and he was not able to take him to church, and whatever faith he had was gone by high school, and so he has no faith, but he's a very moral person because that was what his mother instilled in him. But he would tell people, which was what I used to tell people, is I would rather live in truth and be miserable than feel, you know, happy but be living a lie. And so when I did my faith journey, I basically focused in on the resurrection. And I decided that if the resurrection was a historical fact, then I could, you know, accept the rest of it. And that's
right.
How I came
right.
to faith.
I was raised a Catholic, a little Catholic girl here. And sometimes, well, not in the very beginning, but after my first Holy Communion, and you know, then, I mean, you had to actually, you went to church on Good Friday and everything was closed. I mean, the stores closed from 12 to 3, and the young people went to Mass, and I mean, this, we had to kneel as we went up to the altar. Now, as a little kid, a little girl, if you don't think that was a disaster, I mean, we had so many kids crying, and, oh, my goodness, I got to do this, and, you know, it's what you were told. You had to do it. So it was out of respect. But I think when I got older, and I don't know about you, but when I got older, I started to question. I went to Mass every Sunday, and then in high school, this was, you know, kind of not so good, but to get a ride, we had to go to Mass with my girlfriend's aunt. So that was part of the deal. Well, it wasn't so bad. I mean, we got to do that, and we prayed. And actually, probably what I did, I didn't even know that I was probably meditating at the time, but I didn't know it. I mean, I thought I was praying, but I don't really think I was, because later on, I started to question, well, God is everywhere, isn't he? Is he only in the church, you know? So, but that did not sway me away. I mean, my beliefs are really, really great. I have to tell you that, Daryl, they're wonderful. And I've had it, and I made all my sacraments and all of that. Now, were you raised Catholic? Is that what you were?
No, I my mother was. I would say she was a believer, but. You know, she wanted to define her faith on her own terms, I suppose. My dad, I think, felt that it was useful on occasion anyway to go to church just because it's a good experience. But when he died an atheist. I think my mother, when she died, had a belief. But I don't know that it was well-formed.
Right.
That's between her and, you know, her God.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, my dad used to tease me. I was baptized a Greek Catholic, not a Roman Catholic.
Right.
My dad used to always say, oh, if I go to that church, the pillars are probably going to fall. I mean, it was a joke. And here I am, like, 9 years old or something, he would make me laugh so hard because I think to myself, well, they're not going to fall because you go there. But he made light of it. I mean, he went, but the issue that I had growing up was being baptized a Greek Catholic. You were supposed to be a Roman Catholic to receive all the sacraments if you were a Catholic. Well, my mother had to go talk to the father and all of that. So it was pretty strict. So, you know, some of religion is very, very strict, what happens to you. And that's, I think, sometimes why it turned people off and they didn't want to really, you know, follow their faith. But, you know, I think as you get older, you go your own way. You probably agree. And so you got this idea.
If I could interrupt you, if I could just make
absolutely.
A point there, I don't believe that Christianity, as it is the Christ I read in the New Testament, it's not a religion. It's completely about a relationship.
Uh-huh.
And you either have a relationship with Christ and the Holy Spirit is leading you, or you don't. But
exactly.
Religion,
well, that's true.
Religion implies, I think, maybe conformity to outward norms. And that is not what my understanding of my relationship with Christ.
Well, and I agree with you. And I do think you find your own way and you believe. I mean, it hasn't hurt me. Let's put it that way. You know? I mean, it hasn't hurt me at all. Hasn't hurt you. You've gone on to do great things. And like the yoke. Now, why did you call it the yoke? Do you know? I mean, did it come to you or?
I was searching for a title, and the reason I wrote the book is I have grandchildren that are not too far away from entering those teenage years where they start to acquire their own attitudes and beliefs, just as you indicated. The parents can maybe go so far in terms of shaping attitudes, but ultimately, if we're doing a good job, our kids are going to be making their own decisions, and hopefully, you know, good ones. And I just think about my grandparents. Some of them I didn't even know because they were dead by the time I had an opportunity, even had a memory, and others. I really didn't really know who those people were. And you would ask your parents about them, but you'd only get a glimpse. And I thought, well, you know, it might be kind of fun to write a book. And when I'm in the next life and they really want to get an insight as to who their grandfather was, this would be a legacy that they could pick up and get an insight into what, you know, made him tick. And so I did that. And then I had people read it, and it's for those of you that might be thinking of writing a book, it's extraordinarily important to pick the right people to read your work. And I got some encouragement, and then I had a client of mine come along and said, "Look, you just got to get this thing published. It's too." Important work just to keep inside your family. And so that's what happened.
And that's the name of that tune. Exactly.
Well,
now, was the book based on any actual life events?
Yes. Although a lot of people want to say that I am Barnabas. And I'm not.
Yeah, okay.
There are some, like I say, some of the arguments he was making are the same arguments that I did when I was in his situation, but he had a more difficult childhood certainly than I did, and he made much better choices than I did. But sure, there's a lot of events that are based on real life experiences. Barnabas is a young lawyer in solo practice, and a lot of situations I've created are very, very similar to actual situations I've been in, and so I'm able to do a pretty good job explaining to the reader what he's thinking in terms of his practice and the decisions he's making and why. So it's a lot of the I've had other lawyers read the book and tell me it's a very, very realistic portrayal of how life really is as a trial lawyer.
Well, see, so that, no wonder they think it's you. But you, because you were able to use your experiences so that it could be, I mean, you made it real. It would be like me writing about an attorney. I mean, I don't know anything about any of that. You know what I'm saying? Now, and you can't, you know, I would not even know where to go with it. I'd have to do so much research I probably would give up. But was it easy to do this because you could base it upon some of your experiences? I mean, it must have made it a little bit easier for you.
Sure. And I can, I've had some people that have reviewed the book have said that the characters were very believable for them. They were very real. And I think one of the reasons that they might have said that is that the situations that they're put in, I think, are things that have happened and can happen. And I think the reaction for the characters are what you would expect. So it's.
Yeah.
I tell people when I wrote the book, it was just more therapy, rather than I go home and rather than turn on the tube or read something. What I would do is I would write a chapter in the book, and about the only thing we can do as human beings on this earth that is close to what God, being a God, is writing a fiction book, because you can create these characters and you can kill them off, you can put them in situations, you can have them do things, put dialogue in them. What I found interesting, though, is as the characters really take on real life, you cannot put the character in a situation or have the character saying something that is not really true to their character.
Yeah.
and it would just be kind of a betrayal of the character if you had them do something that was uncharacteristic. I never really would have thought that when I started this, but. I don't know. You have to be a writer, I guess, before you can really understand what I'm saying.
Well, yeah, you have to do it. But here's a question I have. Do you think that the book is good for anyone questioning their own faith?
Oh yes.
Okay.
Yes.
How?
Well, I've come to a point in my life where I don't have doubts and I don't question, but certainly there were times in my life where you would sit back and say, boy, you know, this is really a interesting claim that we are making, that God came to earth and that he lived sin without sin, and then
right.
he died on a cross, and then he was resurrected from the grave after he died.
Yeah, Jesus. Yeah, right. Exactly.
You would say, boy, that just doesn't comport with what we understand to be reality. Isn't it possible that this thing is a fiction? And sure,
right.
I think that particularly the target audience of the book is primarily age 16 to maybe late 20s, where the time where people are really kind of solidifying what they believe and why they believe it. And one of the criticisms I've gotten from the book about the book is some characters there that have a really deep and solid faith, and suggestion has been made these people are too good to be true. And then I ask the question: are there people out there like that? then everybody has to agree, yes, there are.
Yes, there is. I agree right away. I was thinking that. Well, I'm going to tell you, yes, there are.
And so my point is, one of the reasons for writing the book is, so I'm trying to encourage people to be like them. Here is an example of people that have been done a wonderful job loving and being patient, and the Lord will reward that patience and that love. And that's one of the points that I'm trying to make in writing the book.
Yeah, and the faith. I mean, you can believe. To me, and I talk about this every week with whoever I have on, is that you have to believe. You just, that's the only way I know. And it wasn't really instilled in me when I was a little girl, and I had an unusual childhood, but somewhere along the way, I figured it out or I got it. I didn't even question it, and I still don't. It's just, I believe. And I always tell people you can do cartwheels on my lawn and try to convince me no, and I'm going to just tell you, wait and see. You're going to see.
Well, that's,
you know?
That's,
I mean, when you least expect it.
I think that's because you've gotten to know Christ on an experiential level, and it's something you cannot really describe in words, I go to India once a year, and
I saw that in the synopsis that I got. That must be awesome, because they're very spiritual there, correct? Very.
Oh, it's a very spiritual country. As soon as you get off the plane, you can really sense the spirits that are there, and in my opinion, many of them are not positive. I think the Lord's spirit is very, very active in India. But once you have developed that relationship, then you have an understanding of how He's there. He loves you, and He just will never abandon you. And it's
that's how I feel. And even in my darkest, hours, and I've had some experiences, and I'm not going to go into them. Everybody's heard them. I know it's true. I know it's real. I mean, and you don't always have to have proof. You don't always see with your eyes, but it's just something within me that I just know.
I didn't
learn it, Daryl, from my parents at all.
Yeah.
It was just from when I was a little girl, I think, and then I was quiet about it. I didn't go telling everybody, you know, what I believed in and all of that. They probably would have looked at me like I was nuts, but I am very spiritual. I just one of the highest levels, and I've been told that, and you know, I always say with God, all things are possible, but there has to be something within you that you have to believe. And you can have moments when you say, oh, no, this is not, no, that can't possibly. But I'm telling everybody that's listening, I've had things happen to me that I know. So all you have to do is take that first step and start to believe. And you don't have to study anything. You don't have to go to catechism like I had to do, oh, God. Yeah, oh, God, I had to do that. But you're right, Daryl. It's either in you or it's not. And I could try to convince, you know, sometimes I talk to my son about it, and, you know, he had all the sacraments and all of that, but, you know, sometimes he'll say, oh, Mom, come on, you know, really? And I look at him and I say, really? He says, well, you're really strong in your, I am, and nobody's going to ever change that. I mean, you know, but I've had a lot of things that have happened to me that I could prove to people. But I don't have to, because I know. I know what I saw. I know what I received. And sometimes, if you're lucky, you really get to see something with your eyes. And if that happens to you, that's a momentous thing for you. That that nothing can top that, nothing. So tell me, is there another book in you? Are you thinking about doing another book? You should.
Well,
in your spare time,
probably.
Of course.
I'm gonna.
What spare time? He's gonna tell me. I don't have any.
To bounce off your idea there, I will probably write another book. I want to get people to know this book, and after I feel like we've done a good job promoting it and getting it out there, then we can think about doing another one. I've had people just tell me, beg me that I need to try and have somebody make a movie out of it, and I don't know about that, but let me tell you a little bit, because it kind of dovetails into the point you were just making about the last book that I'm going to write, if I write another one or several. But my main character, of course, I mean, it's anybody who pick up this book will realize that Barnabas is, there's three main characters in the book. There's Barnabas, who I've told you about, and he meets Stephanie in law school, and she's a young woman that is born and raised into a family of faith. And she's had good upbringing, not perfect, and she's had her issues and problems along the way, but as she's pretty frank about it, she feels like she's had a pretty good upbringing and good existence and faith,
mm-hmm.
and she doesn't have any complaints. And then there's this fellow Bill, and Bill is a very privileged, arrogant fellow. Dad's very well connected. He's a strong sense of entitlement, and Dad's just constantly bailing him out of scrapes. And he meets Bill in high school, and he just comes to detest the fellow. And Bill just keeps popping up into his life. But in law school, Stephanie and Barnabas meet, and there's a very strong attraction for one another. That's obvious, but hence the title, at least part of the title, The Yoke. She's made it very clear that she is not going to be yoked, i.e. married to somebody who doesn't share her faith.
Mm-hmm.
And Barnabas is, you know, he's not going to pretend that he's a believer when he's not, because he's got too much honor for that. But you, from the instant that the two meet, you know how it's going to end. It's just how we get there. But in the last book, well, of course, Stephanie and Barnabas are married, and the chapter, we start out the first chapter, and Barnabas gets a diagnosis of ALS. And, you know, it's pretty downer, and I asked the doctor, how much do I have? And I said, well, about a year and a half. Maybe three if you're lucky. And then we fast forward about a year and a half, and he's now bedridden, can't leave, and he only can communicate by blinking his eyes.
No.
And and Stephanie is bringing the Sunday sermon CDs to play it for him in the afternoon. And the pastor gives a message on taking advantage of your opportunities. And he gives kind of a Sarah-like, you know, little mock laugh. Yes, take advantage of your opportunities. What opportunities? And the Lord sends him, I don't know, the spirit or an angel, I'm not sure. And he says, well, you know, at least you can pray. And he gets to thinking about that and thinking about that. And over a period of time, he develops a very, very rich prayer life. And Stephanie figures out what's going on, and he becomes a prayer warrior. And she starts bringing people into the home, and they kind of tell what their needs are, and he starts praying for them. And, you know, that's what he does, because that's how he fills his day. And with each chapter, you can take this particular person that has this issue or problem or whatever, and Barnabas is there praying and praying and praying, and And he develops this rich prayer life, and then at the end of the book, the Lord comes to him and says, you know, you've served your time, and it's time for you to go in the next life. We're going to take you home. And guess what Barnabas says?
What's he saying?
He doesn't want to go. He's saying, look, Lord, I've got, you know, this person, you know, and I'm, you know, you've given me, and I'm out there, and I can't leave right now.
Yeah, I have a purpose.
and the Lord's saying, no, we were going to provide for it. It's time for you to go home. And the reason I think that book is so important is there's so many people out there that are just feel so defeated by their circumstances. They just feel like you know, that they're angry at the Lord because of this, or they don't feel like that they can. You know, I think Christianity, atheism, communism says that you can change a person by changing their environment. Christianity says that you are the same regardless of your environment, and you can overcome your environment. You're not shaped by your environment.
Correct. Yeah.
And that's the point of that book, is that we just can't give in to that kind of thinking that we can our life we cannot overcome. We are consigned to misery and despondency, and that's just not a Christian message. We can overcome regardless of our circumstances, and if anybody has got a miserable existence, it's somebody that's suffering from ALS. But at least you can pray, and that's what he does.
And it gets him through some very tough times. Well, you know, like I was telling you earlier, that I think when I was little, I wasn't really praying. I was meditating. But I didn't know it. I really didn't. Now what I do is, I call it meditation, but really I'm just talking to God. Sometimes I talk out loud. You know, sometimes I don't. My cat looks at me like I'm, what is she, who is she talking
to? Sure.
You know? Well,
you understand that. You understand that scripture then, where Paul says, "Pray unceasingly."
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
You're probably
you're right, Darryl.
You're probably even praying when you're sleeping, and
you probably don't even know that. Really funny. If some of my days, I mean, I went through some trying times, but some of my days, you know, I get pulled down into this. Oh, I don't know. It gets dark for me. And then all of a sudden, that's not going to happen to me. I'm going to go sit down. My cat comes beside me, and here I go talking. And I carry on this conversation. It's not like conversations with God. I mean, I'm doing all the talking here. And sometimes I kind of, like I say, let him have it, because I don't really like what's going on in the world. And, you know. And I'll laugh about it, and then I get really quiet. And, there's just a part of me. I mean, everybody that gets near me says that there's just something different about me. And it's true, because my faith is so strong. I'm not going to say I'm going to be able to move mountains, but I could, and I've had this said to me, I could talk somebody off of a ledge on a building. I have no doubt in my mind. My son said to me, you could do anything. I said, I can't swim and I can't skate. He said, oh, but if you had to dive in to save somebody, mother, you would do it. I said, well, I'd probably think about it, because I'm petrified of water. But he said, but you have this faith that you got going with you, that you're going to come out of it okay. It's going to be good. And he said, he told me this. Go ahead.
What do you think of that scripture in James chapter 1? Consider it pure joy, brethren, when trials and tribulations of various kinds are visited upon you, because that is how you have the opportunity to perfect your faith.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't know that I'm to the point where I'm asking – Lord to, you know, send me more trials and tribulations. But I think he was being very sincere when he said that. I think he believed it.
Yeah, but you paid me a really nice compliment telling me that I probably pray when I sleep, and you're probably right. You're probably right. I mean, sometimes I don't wake up real good, but that's just, you know, it's in the dream state. But you'll hear how I end my show, and you're going to understand. And I try to let people know. They'll say, well, you know, I mean, I went through some difficulties. Yes, really, really bad, really bad. But I had some things happen to me in my life that were miracles. And that's no joke. So when I had Jesus come to me, that's no joke either. Came to me in a dream, and then he came to me as I was, and people have heard this, sitting on my bathroom floor sobbing. Because what I was going through, and I saw his feet, and I saw his robe, and I knew it was him. And I got up, Daryl, I got up, I stood up, because I was like, not in hysterics, but I don't cry, I sob. And so I stood up, and it was gone. The feeling was gone. It was like I had all of this strength back. I unlocked the door, and I was good to go. And so I do know, but not everybody gets to experience things like maybe you have or I have, and I wish they would, but I wonder too, Daryl, if it doesn't come from your inner faith that you have and your belief that, because if you really don't have that, you're not going to believe anything you're going to see anyhow. You're going to question everything.
Yeah, that's true, but I hold the view that it's not, I used to think that, like Paul in the New Testament was, well, you know, he obviously had a just powerful, powerful faith that was just remarkable. And I used to think, well, some people are ordained or destined to have that kind of faith, but most of us folks are, you know, we should not have the expectation that we're ever going to be able to have that kind of faith. And I don't believe that anymore. I think the Lord, if we are willing, if we are open, he can develop that kind of faith in all of us. It's just, it's up to us how far we want to go.
That's right.
And if we're really,
I second
if we're
that.
Really open, to, open then we can have, maybe we won't be known in history as some famous person, but that doesn't make any difference. That's a worldly concept. But I think if we are open and we're willing to pay the price, we can all have that just that faith that just doesn't question anymore and knows that the Lord is there all of the time. I would like to tell you a story, because I did put this in the book, and it's kind of in line with that theme. I was out in India, and I was told by a fellow that was helping me over there that you need to go out into the village of Raju Ratnam, this young pastor in his village, because his mother is ailing, and it's a very difficult circumstance. And so I went out there and spent the night, and this poor woman was paralyzed in her left side to the point where she had a lot of discomfort, but she was they fed her by a tube, drop milk drops, and others, and in order for her to have her a bowel movement, he had to put plastic gloves on and help her. Difficult situation, and I went to sleep that night, and I've never prayed this prayer ever before, but I said, Lord, just take her. Please take her. It's time, and she's older, and take her. Woke up the next morning, met with what were the village elders, who were Hindus. They were Hindu priests of this village, and they told me that one, a young man is, that's not his obligation in that culture. That's what he was doing was woman's work, really. But
right.
he was doing that anyway, and the whole village became aware of what was going on there. And they were so moved by the love that he had for his mother that he was making a more powerful statement about the love of Christ that he could have by making any message, you know, from his little church pulpit. And so I was kind of ashamed and got in the car and went on to the next location. I said, okay, Lord, I understand why you're keeping her alive. And I had that same scene that in the book. I have Barnabas ministering, caring for his mother in the same way. But you might guess what they call this Pastor Roger Rutnam in that village. They have a name for him. And you have to understand the culture, the Hindu religion. They have many, many types, many gods, millions of gods. But they call Raju Ratnam, to this day, his mother passed on about 6 months later, the living God. And, you know, it was just a very powerful thing. You know, it was inspiring to see how just a simple act of loving your mother like that can have such a huge influence, you know, in all the people around.
Well, it's true. But some people have difficulty loving somebody like that. They're afraid. They think something's going to happen to them. And, I don't know. I mean, I have dark days sometimes because of what I went through. But, all I have to do, and I tell everybody this every week, Daryl, is I just sit down and what they might call meditation. Sometimes I'm just really quiet. I'm not
mm-hmm.
thinking anything. I have my dear cat with me.
Yeah.
And I'm just really quiet. And it doesn't mean that I'm hearing anything or seeing anything. I'm receiving. There's no doubt in my mind. No doubt. And
mm-hmm.
so that's why I'm able to get back up again and like, oh, okay, I'm good to go now. It's all gone. It's like it's been taken away from me. Those moments that bother me so much, they've been taken away. And I just have this, I just know that, you know, sometimes you have to feel that you're being not saved for someone, but you just know that there's somebody coming along. Especially for me, now people know my circumstances, it's going to just be so good to me and so loving to me and make up for it all. And you know why I feel that way? Because I just know that God is watching me. I just know. And he's going to take care of it. He's going to, because of everything that I've done in my life and continue to do, and I'm not going to stop. I am what I am. And however it turned, I mean, I would have to explain to you everything that happened to me. And then you'd say, oh, okay, I get it. She saw this. This came to her when she was ill. And all these things, Daryl, that I've had of, if you could call it proof, I just know. And I can't give it to anybody. I can't say, well, you've got to feel this way. It's got to come from within. And it's not even, I feel that there's a place behind your heart. And it's like a soul. You could call it that, but it's more than your heart. It's deeper than that, and it goes behind your heart, and it's so deep in there that that's where you get your courage. That's where you get your faith, your belief system, forgiveness, the ability to forgive. You mentioned that. It's true. It all comes from there. It's so deep. I couldn't even tell you where it is exactly, and it's not – if you looked at the human body, it's not, you can't even see it there. But I know it's there because it's there for me. And so I wish I could transfer it to everybody. But, and you know, yourself, everybody has all these things that happen to them. And like you said, you know, and it's sometimes you're dealt these cards that are, I'm using that, you know, metaphorically, cards that are maybe not, they're not all good. Maybe they're spades. They're not hearts and diamonds, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to happen. But you have to have that belief. I can't teach you. I can't teach people that. I just cannot. You either have it or you don't. And I can't tell you where I got mine from because I have no idea. Except I had a lot of things happen to me as a little girl and growing up. So probably that's where it all came from. But I will remember what you said to me always. You probably pray when you're sleeping. That is one of the most beautiful things anybody's ever said to me. Because that means that I have connected with the divine. I know. And thank you for that. I think that's just awesome. Just awesome. Awesome stuff. And so, you know, we still have 15 minutes here. You are married to your lovely wife. Her name is Betsy. You have 5 children, right? And 8 grandchildren. My goodness. My goodness.
Mm-hmm.
You are, now tell me what this is. You're the president of Margum, Inc. Oh, it's a Christian missionary and an organization that conducts several Christian-sponsored programs in India, right?
Right. Two of my children are. So what
does that involve? I mean, you only have to go there once a year? Is that what it is? Or you find yourself going more often? Or?
Two of my children are adopted from India. And so when I went over and picked one of them up, I just fell in love with the country and were looking for excuses to go back. And I think, you know, my time with Margum, I think, is about to close. I think it's time maybe to move, hand over the leadership of that ministry to the next generation. But one of the things that I think that the Lord is leading me to do is to try and put together a program where people can donate money to encourage families in India, and probably it would something could be anywhere to adopt. I mean, it cost us many years ago about $25,000 to each child, and that was 25, 30 years ago. And so it's got to even be worse than that now. If there was a fund or an organization out there that could say, okay, we have studied your family, you are excellent parents, we are willing to put together a donation amount of money to help defray the cost, if you will, adopt children that, you know, need a loving home.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably the direction that we're heading in the future.
Now, your children, have they followed you on your path? I mean, are they doing anything that you're doing? That just came to me all of a sudden. I don't know why. I would think somebody who has done, like yourself, done so much, they look up to you. They have to. I mean, I can't imagine them not. So are they following your work? What are some of them doing? I mean, they're all ages, I take it, correct?
Well, you know, you raise a point. If you read the the inside cover of the book, the book is dedicated to my wife Betsy, and then it's also dedicated to Oliver. Oliver is my grandson, and he.
Mm-hmm.
Is actually with the Lord.
Okay.
And that was a very, very difficult year. And my oldest boy, Joel, it was Oliver's father, and they married to a young woman by the name of Sonia. And he was a very fragile child, barely made it a year, wound up dying. I think it was not a coincidence. He wound up dying on Easter Sunday. And about 2 months after that, I remember having a conversation with Sonia. And I says, you know, how are you doing? How was this experience? And she made this statement. She said, you know, if I had a choice, and she had three small children at the time, so you can imagine what that would have been like. If I had a choice of having another year with Oliver in that fragile condition or he'd never be born at all, I would take the second year. And then, of course, I said, well, why? And she said, because life is a gift from God, and you never reject a gift from God. Now, here's a 30-year-old woman that has been through. You can just imagine what that year was like.
Yeah, no, I can't. I mean, all we can do is imagine. No, I have, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was very difficult just to watch. But then a couple months later, I asked Joel, my son, I said, look, you know, how you doing with your relationship with the Lord? And like, and he said this, he said, I feel like I'm going closer to the Lord, and he's calling me in the ministry. And he went to seminary school, spent 4 years in seminary school, and now he's very active in the Indian missions. He is very much into house churches. He feels very strongly that that's how the Lord is going to be multiplying, particularly in third world countries. And he's active in terms of he's had training and wants to go out. And that there is a very active movement out there in terms of house churches, and particularly some of the news reports you can get coming out of Iran, that there's a great force going on in Iran, and it's all because of these house churches. The Iranian government doesn't know what to do with them because they don't have an actual, you know, edifice church that they can attack.
Yeah.
And their people are spreading the word by, 8, 10, 12 people at a time, and they're multiplying, and he's very much into that. But he's been to India with me 4 or 5 times, as Sonia has been. So, but I, you know, I remember once when he first went over there, you'll probably enjoy this story. First went over there, and one of the interpreters, a fellow by the name of Kaladar, pulls Joel aside and says, Kaladar, or says, Joel, I want you to know that your father is a very great, great, great man. And I just think it's important that you should know that. And what do you think Joel said? He looked at Kaladar and said, Kaladar, I know him better than you do.
Touché. Oh, God, I say that a lot. God. And you want to hear the thing. You know, we used to say that, and somebody would say, you rang? Not you. Yeah, you know. Now, what about your other kids? That's only your son. You had 4 others, right?
Oh, yes. Well, the
I just want to see, who has followed you? I mean, you are,
well, they've,
to me. You're a great man. I know. I already know. You don't have to
argue
with me.
Well, you know,
you
need to talk.
We're
to
not
them.
In court now, Daryl.
No, I get it, but let me tell you about child number 2, Emily.
Okay.
Emily is actually, she's an executive for the Washington Nationals, and she's very,
oh,
very
excited.
Oh, my
goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. And if the Nationals win the World Series, she's going to get a World Series ring.
Oh,
so,
my goodness. How wonderful.
And she's very well organized, not a shrinking violet, a very, very strong woman, and very proud of her. I think the only reason she didn't go to law school is because she was just kind of rebelling, but she would have made an excellent lawyer. But she's had a lot of, she's, you know, in her mid-30s, and she's got a lot of responsibility. And then third child, Andrew, teaches at a Christian high school, is the soccer coach there, is And has given me also three more grandchildren, as Joel has got three living grandchildren. And then Carrie is an adopted child from India, and she does social work in Indiana. And John is the youngest. He's in the letter, and he just got married and, you know, starting out his career, just bought his first house. So he's... But we're very proud of our family. We're all in a very good place. I don't know that our family's ever been in a better place.
That's awesome. I just have one son. Mm-hmm. I have a beautiful granddaughter who is also very spiritual. She's like me. And but she kind of keeps it to herself. Well, when she's around me, we talk a lot. You know, we talk. But I don't think her friends know. And that's okay, because we discussed that too. And it wasn't too long ago, it was this summer, that she had to read a book. I don't know why I'm telling you this. I think you're going to find this pretty cool. She had to read this book, and last summer I read, she loves how I read. Because I go, you know, the dialogue is up and down, and I read differently. My eyes, I don't read like, oh, the boy went out the door. I read the boy went out the door all at one time. Okay, that's how my eyes read. So she loves for me to read to her. So I read this book, and she's sitting there mesmerized. I said, "What's wrong with you?" She said, "I cannot believe how much I love to hear you read." And sometimes I'll ad lib in the book, or some of the names were weird, and I changed the names because I wanted to make it interesting for her. But that time spent with her and how she watches me, she's so much like me. It's unreal. And I'm really proud of her. She's all A's. She's taking what they call AP classes, which are college courses in the 10th grade. She had them in the 9th. So she's going to have a lot under her belt by the time she gets out of high school, which is totally awesome, right?
Uh-huh.
But sometimes people that are spiritual or believe, in, they won't tell you. They don't tell you anything. And I don't know why. Are they ashamed of it? I don't know. Now you have another child, one more child. I should not interrupt you. You have another one, right? Is that
John is the
You have
oldest.
Emily, and you have Joel, and who's the third one?
Andrew teaches at a Christian high school. Carrie Sujata is a social worker over in Indiana, and then there's John. He's the youngest. So that's all five. I told you about all five. Your daughter, I wrote that book, you know.
My granddaughter, yeah.
Yeah, your granddaughter.
She probably would like it.
Yeah, she's the age that I would like her.
She's 15.
The book.
15 going on 25. No, I just say that to be funny. She's 15. And she's real sensitive. But she might get something out of the book. I have the book, as a matter of fact, because it was sent to me. And I can read it. Oh, she'll love that. She, my son will say, yeah, but, you know, she's going to get in college. You know, what is she going to do? And we looked at each other one day, and then we kind of rolled our eyes. And I said to her, well, her name is Jada. What are you going to do? She says, well, Graham, I'm going to call you, and you're going to read to me over the phone.
Well,
and we laughed so hard because I could see her doing that. But as I told you at the beginning, I have no qualms about talking. And it doesn't matter whether I know you or not. I feel like I've known you forever, you see. That's what I can do. That's a gift that I have. And but I'm going to get the book, and I'm going to mention it to her.
Maybe use that book for, Bible studies. Well, you know, Sunday school studies.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. She would probably like it very, very
well.
Much. I'm sure she would. And you're a great man. And I'm so happy that
you
came
just
on the
remember
show and it all worked out.
Just remember what son told Collador when, you know, he said I was a great man. So I've got
yeah.
a family that keeps me humble, so that's important.
Your family keeps you on your toes is what they do. And before I let you go, I want to ask you, what's it like to be you do trials? Is that what you do? You do jury trials? What kind of law do you do? I'm just curious.
Well, I do all kinds of law, but it's mostly civil litigation.
Okay. Oh, like somebody suing somebody because of this, that, and the other thing, and...
Well, yes, but it's... I don't like to take on a case unless I feel like, you know, that the Lord is in it. And if I don't feel that the Lord is in it, then I don't take it on.
Okay. And that's not has nothing to do with winning or coming out ahead. You have a feel for it, right?
Well, now this is just me, okay? I'm not saying that, I'm not trying to say that the Lord, you have to think like I do or you're not in good graces of the Lord, but I do think that we are very blessed in our culture and society that we have a legal system where the little guy can take on the establishment if he feels like his rights have been trampled on. And the major trial that Barnabas is having to deal with is he's representing this fellow that a large coal company stole his invention. And so it's Barnabas is, it's kind of a David versus Goliath kind of story. And he steps up and tries to do something, you know, to help this fellow.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've certainly enjoyed this with you. I really have. It's just kind of helped to solidify what I already know. But really, it really is the truth. And you need to do another book. And when you get that one all done, I'll get a hold of Helen and say, okay, we got
to
have him back on the show again. Because that's how I got you, actually, was through her, you know. And everybody needs to know this. A publicist usually will send me, you know, something about an author or something to put in the magazine. And, well, what do you think about this? You know, would you like to have him on your show? I mean, I can get just about anybody I want, but, you know, I'm almost full now till January, which is a wonderful thing. It really, really is. And I work with about three publicists back and forth a lot. And there's just so many people out there. But when I like to hold the books. And so Helen sent me your book. And she said, well, why do you like to do that? I said, I have to always hold the book. I don't know why. It gives me this feeling.
Yeah.
And I had this feeling with the book. And I said, I want to have him on my show. See if you can get him. And here we are. We did it. We got together by Cracky. Oh, yes, yes, yes. And I wish you great success. And I'm going to go have Helen send me something else for the magazine. I'd like to have reoccurring stuff when I have somebody on the show. I like to keep inserting, like for the November issue, I'd like to keep putting stuff in there because I think it's very important. It's you know, sometimes she'll send me an excerpt. Or she'll send me, the author will do an article, but, you know, I'll tell her I want something, and she'll get it to me. Of course, you know now, Daryl, I've got your email address, so it's all over. You're not going to escape.
Well, thank you.
I'll say, Helen.
It was really
fun. I'll say, Helen. Yes, Helen, if you don't do this, I'm going to contact him myself. So there. So she will. But anyways, I'm just so happy. I'm smiling from ear to ear. My heart feels good. What's behind my heart, which is my soul and beyond, feels really good. And, you know, have you gone to India already this year?
This year, yes.
Okay.
And like I say, I think the Lord's telling me he wants me to slow down I think it's time for others, you know, to step up and take the Margam ministry.
Take the reins, right?
Yeah, he's moving me in another direction. But it was a great time getting to know the folks over there, and Lord willing, I will return someday.
Yeah, well, I hope you do. You need to go back there again. I think it's it's a great place for you, and it's great for you to be there. The whole country gets something from you. And again, you have an awesome evening, and thank you again for coming on my show. I really enjoyed it. And now everybody knows what I always, and you're going to like this, what I always end my show with. I do it all the time. I don't even know how it got started. I guess it got started when I had my co-host who passed away suddenly, and she was like my sister, and I couldn't do the radio for like 3 months. I just couldn't do it. I wasn't doing interviews, and somebody suggested I do interviews because I love talking to people, and I can make you feel like you've known me forever, so you're not going to hesitate. You're going to want to, you know, I like I told you, we're not going to have to worry about me talking. It just doesn't happen for me. But anyways, I always end the show this way, and I'm going to let you hear it. Believe in things you cannot see because they really are there. Have a great evening. Good night, Daryl. Best wishes
God
to you.
You're
a sweet man. Thank you.
Bye.
Good night.
Thank you very much. Bye.